If you haven't played Paddy Power Fantasy yet, you're missing out. But on the upside, if you haven't played it yet, you qualify for a risk-free first go. Get up to £20 back as cash when you play Paddy Power Fantasy. And because every NFL game day is a season in itself, you don't have to wait to find out if you've won. Paddy Power Fantasy. Hate waiting, love winning. New customer offer, min £5, max £20 refund. T's and C's apply. Paddy Power Fantasy rules apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show, presented by Paddy Power Fantasy. Happy New Year, everybody. I hope 2020 is going to plan so far in the small sample size that we have to date. I tell you what, it's not going to plan for a number of head coaches in the NFL, though, or I should say ex-head coaches, and that is what Iron Mike and I are going to be getting into for the most part today. Black Monday, and that's rolling on into the week, and which coaches have gone, which coaches have survived, and who might be heading into the frame for those vacancies. So it's a coaching carousel special on the Nat Coombs Show this week. Don't forget, we're back Friday with our wildcard weekend preview. Comedian Marek Larwood in the house, so that should be fun, at ESPN HQ. So that drops Friday, but this show, all about the coaches. Enjoy. Happy New Year, Iron Mike.
Happy New Year, guys. It's got to be a better decade than the last one. Year than the last one. Last decade wasn't so bad in some ways.
We don't want to run off the whole decade. There were some high points in it as well as low points. But yeah, fresh start. How many decades is this for you now,
Iron Mike? A lot.
Do we move on? Hey, was it the running order? What can I say?
Yeah, you see, I came along in the second year of a decade, and so that means I see a whole lot of them. Somber note, non-football,
let's start
but
on a happy note. Yeah.
Sporting, but somber. Two deaths already. First, David Stern, the commissioner of the NBA. Who you could say was probably, after Pete Rozelle, the most influential commissioner in American sports, and certainly responsible for opening up the Olympics to professionals. He knew, like Rozelle, he knew what he had and he knew what to do with it. Rozelle knew that TV was going to make the NFL big, and Stern recognized that the sort of new TV, and the ESPN and Sports Center and all that right. was going to help make the NBA big. And then just last night, Don Larsen died, who, was a pitcher for the New York Yankees, who threw the only perfect game in World Series history. He was a journeyman pitcher. But he threw this one great game and beat the Brooklyn Dodgers. Yogi Berra jumped into his arms after the last pitch. It's a nice little story. There's a good clip of it on ESPN if you want to look at it.
Go check it out. Yeah, I love that. He had 90 last, I'm seeing. Yeah, he love those stories where you have, as you said, journeyman. And let's not write that off. I think it's easy to do that sometimes when somebody, is playing for the New York Yankees, made it as a pro, but because they're not a superstar, quite easy to write off these careers, that people that have made it all this way, but never really do anything exceptional. Larsen manages to add that moment in his career as well, which he'll always be remembered for. With Stern, Mike.
Yeah.
So era-wise, because obviously it was the Jordan, Shaq, 80s, 90s. Was that his heyday, really?
He was lucky in a sense because he came in. The NBA was at a low point sort of in the late 70s, and he came in time to ride the Larry Bird Magic Johnson rivalry, which sort of started bringing back fans who had looked at the late 70s games as being a bunch of overpaid drug addicts running up and down the court with no reason. And then, of course, Jordan came along to add to that. And then, as you say, Shaq and a couple of other superstars. And he knew that the league would sell itself on superstars. And he was, again, lucky in that the sort of Sports Center 24-hour cable thing needed superstars and needed spectacular plays, and he knew the NBA was going to offer that, and he had the vision to connect with international basketball and with the IOC
He knocked a bit with the whole hip-hop culture connection as well.
Absolutely, though. Yeah. And the music came along. And the NBA had an amazing growth internationally and still has a big spot internationally. And, of course, the NBA is full of foreign players as international basketball catches up very quickly with the United States.
But was he knocked for that? It was, I guess, my question, Stern, that presided over that growth and that pop culture crossover with hip hop. But didn't he take, were there detractors that felt he was quite exploitative there?
I don't think so. Mm. I don't think it went too far, you know, in the sense of the tail wagging the dog. Mm. And I think it's interesting that you know, Jay-Z has hooked up with the NFL at this point, as in a, but he just, he managed to also keep, he managed to keep the league going forward positively for virtually all of his reign as commissioner, which is a very difficult thing to do in any pro sport, because the owners have different, you know, different visions of what they want to do. The players and the players association you have to work with. And basically as the pie was growing, he kept everybody happy there. I think he did a really good job for what it was, apart from, you know, being accused of faking the draft so that Patrick Ewing would go to the New York Knicks, which, which I still believe in that conspiracy theory. You know, go to the video. It's the Zapruder film of the NBA.
What did he do? Was it when they were drawing it out of a bag, like FA Cup draw stuff?
Yeah, it was like that, in an envelope. And you know, the conspiracy theorists would say, oh, there's his hand. You know, you can see him looking for the idea was, they said one of them they kept in a freezer so he could tell which one it was. That was the conspiracy theory.
Doesn't make any sense that they would try and favor such a small market team as the New York Knicks. I'm not buying it for it.
I wrote a poem about Don Larson, which has been published in a number of places. I'll find it and put it up. But
great. Well, let's dig that out, Mike. Maybe post it on your Patreon or in your Patreon column, and we can link out to it.
Patreon, Iron Mike versus the Machine. You probably want the final update.
I don't think our listeners have been looking forward to anything more than the final update of that.
That's right. Well, going in, as I said, you know, the Machine, AccuScore, and I were tied at the NFL PickWatch site, although I'm not on the PickWatch site, although the guys have been in touch with me, and I probably will be if we continue in the future.
Well, that's amazing news. Hang on. Whoa. And then, you're going to be on PickWatch next season?
Probably, yeah.
Oh, legend. Okay.
And then, so going into week 17, though, we had each been pat. We were still tied, but we were in second place, one game behind a human being, Christian D'Andrea. And in week 17, D'Andrea went, I think, 8-8, so he dropped out of contention. AccuScore was 11-5 in the ever difficult week 17.
Week 17,
and Iron Mike was 12-4.
So
Iron Mike finished the season one game ahead of the Machine, and you know, have been sending out triumphal tweets ever since.
That doesn't surprise me. One job. Well, congratulations, Iron Mike. We're proud of you. And how's AccuScore taking the news? And
I don't know. You know, I think they had to get the 3-1 oil out and, you know, solder some of the connections.
How close to it do you think was the final week 17, you versus AccuScore, to the final scenes of Rocky IV? with you as Stallone and AccuScore as Dolph Lundgren.
Yeah. I just have this vision of myself up at 4:30 in the morning breaking a couple of eggs into a glass and then sitting down to pick the games.
I think you should just get up in front of everybody. I could change, you could change, everybody could change. And that's how we'll wrap it until next season's picks. Well, you know, the regular season is done and dusted, but the playoffs roll on. We're going to get into a wild card preview special with Marek Larwood in the house on Friday to get into that. So looking forward to that.
The NFL have let him go. You know, I thought he was like next in line for the Dallas Cowboys coaching job.
He's still harboring dreams of making it as a quarterback, of course, I'm like the NFL, all these years later. So Marek in the house tomorrow, that is. We're recording this Thursday morning, so Friday. We'll be looking ahead to the weekend, Saturday games as well as Sunday, of course, when it comes to the wild card for you newbies along for the first playoffs this year. So make sure you set your clocks for that. But we'll get into break down those games in more detail. And I, Mike, of course, will do that on his Patreon, aforementioned Patreon column, patreon.com/ Mike Carlson, FMTE. But today we want to concentrate primarily on Black Monday and or in the Dallas Cowboys case, Black someday at some point in the future.
Gray Monday.
Already some changes made, other changes inevitable, but just haven't been announced yet. Back to Jason Garrett and the Cowboys. So we'll look at everything that's happened so far and get Mike's perspective on what might happen at various franchises and coaches or coordinators in the frame to move into gigs. We've got a mailbag as well. We're going to dive into a few of your questions at the NC Show. Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter is how you get in touch with us. And Mike's top five, starting 2020 off on a high and a positive cerebral note, the top five disappointing players.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to start.
Way to motivate, Mike. Way to motivate.
Let's push 2019 away and forget about them.
So we'll get into that in a bit. I'm looking forward to that. And if Baker Mayfield's not on that list, Mike, there's going to be serious trouble. We'll start with the Browns. That wasn't deliberate, by the way, but Freddie Kitchens is on my list, of course, is on the list of casualties that haven't made it past Black Monday. One and done, much like Rob Jedinski was a few years back at the Browns. And a lot has been made, Mike, in the aftermath of the seemingly perpetual transition at Cleveland, that they get through head coaches quicker than anybody else. And it's a little bit unfair because they chuck in a few interim coaches in there. Greg Williams, for example, counts as a head coach because he ran them for a few games last season. But nevertheless, it is undeniable that they are, compared to the Pittsburgh Steelers, for example, their rivals, completely different in recent times in terms of trying to create long-term stability and therefore long-term success. So bearing that in mind, although Kitchens clearly underperformed this year and the Browns underperformed this year, was it a mistake to get rid of him after 1 year?
I don't think so, because I think what you saw was that Freddie Kitchens in that particular situation especially was in over his head as a head coach. Remember, he had been promoted. He wasn't even the offensive coordinator when he was promoted to the head coaching job last year. And part of the reason for their success toward that year was simply the change, I think. It just, you know, changing the atmosphere, which is often as effective as changing schemes or whatever. And, you know, unfortunately, on that team, with the addition, say, of Odell Beckham in particular, he was taking over a team with, shall we say, discipline problems or potential discipline problems. And he didn't really have the gravitas, I think, to be able to handle that. I also think that teams caught up to what he wanted to do with Baker Mayfield, at least, based on the tape from the last half of last year, and were able to scheme against that. And he wasn't able to counter scheme well enough. You know, I think Freddie Kitchens should get another job as a coordinator somewhere. You know, I think he's inventive enough, probably has the credential, the temperament to be a good coordinator on the right team. But, you know, I wasn't surprised at all that he went in Cleveland. And a little bit more surprising was that John Dorsey went, the general manager, which means they pretty much now have to come up with a general manager before you come up with a coach. Or else get them as a package. And that's why a lot of people are talking about Josh McDaniels and Nick Caserio as the package deal. And you remember, McDaniels was going to go to Indianapolis last year and then changed his mind. That's possible the Patriots offered him the head coaching job when Bill retires, but the question is how long will he have to wait for that? And Caserio was going to go to Houston to work with Bill O'Brien when they had the shakeup there. Another ex-Patriot, obviously. But Caserio and McDaniels played in college together. They're close friends, and they could be a package deal for some team. Now, whether that team is Cleveland, whether you want to move into a Jimmy Haslam-owned situation or not, without a whole lot of guarantees about, you know, what you can do and what you can spend and how much freedom you'll have, I don't know. But that's a really interesting theory. And without knowing the Josh McDaniels contractual situation, I don't know whether it's going to happen or not. But that would make sense, that you ditch your general manager because you've already got one in mind.
Got lined up. That is really interesting. I want to talk more about McDaniels and situation as well, which you've touched upon there, and certain hot coordinators or head coaches wanting the right situation more than others, right? For some, it's more important than others.
If you're an offensive minded coach and you think you can work with Baker Mayfield or you have in mind a free agent, you know, maybe it was, but sure. You know, you're walking into a loaded situation. If you can convince Odell Beckham to stay and be on board with everything else, you got, you know, you got Nick Chubb, you've got Landry, you've got Beckham, you've got Njoku, you know, it's, you've got a pretty solid offensive line with maybe one exception. You know, it should be for the same reasons that everyone was saying that they were a playoff contender this year.
Yeah. It's a decent gig in that respect for sure. Just on the general manager change and Dorsey, who again hasn't been in the gig very long, and I remember because they had Sashi and that crew, and I think that was all very much look at us being very progressive and we're doing things differently, and they didn't last very long, and Dorsey came in, it's only a couple of years as well, so it isn't just, and point taken about the tag team with the head coach a lot of the time, but it isn't just the turbulence and the impermanence of the head coaching situation, but it's also the front office as well. Why does this keep happening with the Cleveland Browns? Is this down to an ownership that is just inefficient and out of its depth, or just bad at what it's meant to be doing? Or is there more to it? Has it been bad luck? Has it been a combination of things? Why are we always talking about the Browns failing again and having to change things up again?
It's a good point. Maybe it's a tradition. You could call it the curse of Art Modell. You know, everybody keeps arguing Art Modell should be in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, some of us point out he fired two of the four greatest coaches in NFL history in Paul Brown and Bill Belichick. He also fired Marty Schottenheimer. You know, in this situation, Haslam is unpredictable, but you can argue that for the last couple of years, he's stayed out of the scene. There's kind of an analogy with Dan Snyder there. But they gave up on Sashi Brown did what everyone this year was calling tank. You know, basically trading star players for future draft picks. They gave up on him at the point where he had accumulated quite a bit of talent and draft picks. And Dorsey did, I thought, a pretty good job on paper of assembling on paper a roster that could compete. Then the question is, keeping Freddie Kitchens as head coach, was that a mistake? Was that Dorsey's mistake? Was it Haslam's mistake? It was hard to go away from because he had had that success. But you could argue that he was still only an offensive coach. Greg Williams was running the defense, and they really couldn't keep Greg Williams because he was expecting to be a head coach with them. I think he thought he should be the head coach, and Freddie should have been his offensive coordinator. So maybe that got out of hand for Dorsey. But I honestly think that the reason Dorsey's gone is that Haslam has a GM coach package in mind.
Right.
There could be personal issues involved. They could be saying, well, why did you bring in Odell Beckham when he was going to create problems, or, you know, not be the Odell Beckham that he was in New York, when actually he is the Odell Beckham he was in New York. And no one paid attention. That's really hard to put your finger on. But Dorsey's now been fired twice in 3 years, which is, you know, interesting for a guy who's supposed to be a great judge of talent.
Let's talk McDaniels then, and we'll move on to other coaching situations. So I guess specifically with him, because we had the situation a few years back with the Colts where he took the gig that he didn't. He's always a coordinator, or often a coordinator, that when vacancies appear, his name is aligned to it, either by founder speculation or more than that, and inevitably he's going to be a head coach. And as you suggested, Mike, the Patriots succession plan makes a lot of sense. But let's say that doesn't happen, right? Let's say for whatever reason Belichick carries on and on and on, and McDaniels gets fed up with that. So much has been talked about him wanting to walk into the right situation. So is that, what are the things that make up a good situation? You talked about talent on the field. That's obviously something. I guess the lack of interference from an owner is another. What else do you think for an elite coordinator like McDaniels, who can probably have the pick of the gigs, what is it he's looking for?
Well, those things, plus, you know, a good relationship with a general manager. You don't want to walk into a situation where you're, you know, the Bill Parcells quote, you're given the ingredients and told to make dinner. You want to have some say in what the ingredients are. And I think that's kind of the that's kind of the trio of reasons. Guys may have family reasons to want to be in one place or another.
Good weather, obviously high on your
list. Yeah, well, your kids and so's families, that kind of, but that usually doesn't factor in, I think, as much as it probably ought to for a lot of coaches.
Gambling, that's the big one.
Yeah. And the interesting thing in New England is, if McDaniels leaves and Caserio leaves, Bill Belichick is pretty much alone. He's been his own defensive coordinator this year. Although they've been statistically the best defensive team in the league for most of the season. I don't know what last week did to the overall standings. It's been a problem, adjusting and at his age, I don't know if Bill's going to want to continue on. He may have a plan B in mind, and finally, rather than keep promoting young coaches, he might be, bringing in some veteran guys.
The band back together. Yeah.
Yeah.
Romeo Crennel back.
You look at Brett Bielema, this year coming in, the former college head coach, but I'd be wary of Cleveland were I a Josh McDaniels. But on the other hand, if you're getting your general manager and the coach, you've got promises from the owner to stay out. The only problem in Cleveland is that I don't think you're going to be like Miami in sort of a 3-year building plan, or Oakland or whatever. You're not going to have that freedom. There's probably going to be, after the first season, a lot of clamor if you don't do relatively well. You'll be expected to do relatively well in the first season.
Win early doors.
In a tough division.
Good point. And the precedent is there, as we've established, that you don't get as much time in Cleveland as you might elsewhere as well. All right, let's move on to, you mentioned Dan Snyder, to his Washington Redskins, who, of course, took care of business before anyone else this season, getting rid of Jay Gruden during the season. And they've had an interim situation that they have now re-upped and gone to Ron Rivera, who was relinquished of his duties from the Panthers tail end of the season, of course, Riverboat Ron. Bruce Allen has gone as well, their president. Rivera in, and he's already moved quickly in terms of personnel stuff and brought Jack Del Rio in as well. So already things looking much more secure for the Redskins, certainly in terms of getting stuff done early on. What do you make of where they've gone with Rivera and Rivera bringing in Del Rio? And again, applying that to this Redskins roster, and I know that a fair amount of change will happen from now to next season, but the nucleus of the talent they have there with Haskins and McLaurin, what do you make of what's happened in Washington over the last 4 or 5 days?
That's going to be an interesting one. Partially, to see who replaces Bruce Allen, because he's forced out over the last couple of years a couple of pretty good personnel guys, and he's been the guy who makes all the decisions. And their roster has been past almost decade, I think, one with a lot of talent but no depth. They've been incredibly vulnerable to injuries. They've made some bad decisions at key positions, not least of which the whole Kirk Cousins, what would you call it, soap opera, over a number of years where they kept franchising him and not making up your mind as to what you want to do with him. So I think there'll be celebrations that Bruce Allen is gone. Look at what he did with Williams this year. Their best player basically, and he doesn't play because they're feuding over his medical treatment and money, and they wouldn't sort that out either. So
with Cousins though, Mike, can you in retrospect, and I think a bigger Cousins supporter than others. It maybe won't go as far as to say I'm a Cousins apologist, but not a detractor in the way that many people are. But can you blame them for what we? I mean, Cousins is
I think the point was you're not blaming them for keeping them or not keeping them. The point is that you didn't make a decision. He wound up costing them more money by franchising him than he would have if they signed him to a long-term contract. And at some point, you have to decide, is he our guy or isn't he? Do we want to build a team around him or do we not? And if you don't, then you get rid of him and you bring in someone you do.
You move on.
And that was the core of the problem. Were they a better team with Alex Smith at quarterback, potentially? I thought good fit for Jay Gruden, but it didn't work out that way, even when he was, while he was healthy. Are they going to be a better team with Haskins? Is Haskins going to start if Alex Smith comes back healthy? which he says he's going to this year. That's, you know, that's going to be, it's going to be a serious question for them. And can they bring the, Trent Williams back? Or is he just going to, you know, at this point, just going to quit? Rivera's a good, player coach, you know, a good coach for players, a guy players like playing for. Del Rio was the same way. I think defensively they'll be on the same page more or less. So, you know, we'll see who they bring in as a coordinator. I keep thinking Norv Turner's going to show up right. as their coordinator. And, you know, and Norv, of course, was a head coach in Washington that, that Dan Snyder let go. You know, he keeps letting coaches go who do better than the coaches who follow them, which is right. an interesting, starting with Marty Schottenheimer, going back right. to him again, you know, and then Norv, you know, and, you know, be careful of what you wish for because you right. might get it. That's kind of Dan Snyder's motto.
Marty mentioned him a few times. Tough breaks, hasn't he? Really, because he fired by the Chargers.
The Chargers was the worst one. I mean, you know, he had what was it a 13-3 season?
Yeah, 14-2. Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, and he loses in the playoffs in a game that he should have won. You know, it wasn't his fault they get an interception and then turn it back to the Patriots. But, yeah. you know, a bad reason to be fired, you know. Yeah. And, you know.
Tough breaks for Marty.
Yeah, so the Chargers are not in this
right. Let's look at that. Yeah,
so conversation, although Philip Rivers may be gone, which is very interesting.
Yeah, well, so surprised that they haven't moved to Anthony Lynn is one of those coaches that Adam Gase at the Jets as well. There was speculation, despite the fact they'd given him the dreaded vote of confidence during the season. The front office that, or the ownership, I should say, that the Gase might be gone.
Yeah, there's a couple, you know, Gase, Vic Fangio, Dan Quinn, they're second half coaches. They've had a good second half of the season, which gives enough reason to keep them in the management's mind. In Fangio's case, you know, now you've found who's the guy who's probably going to be your quarterback of the future in Drew Locke. So that's a reason. Quinn was actually fun for a few weeks watching him on the sidelines because he'd obviously relaxed and just decided to go with it, probably figuring that, you know, there was nothing he could lose at that point. So he's going to be back. Gase, first year coach. A first-year coach will always get rehired if he fits that pattern of having a bad first half and a good second half.
Right.
Because they're saying, okay, there was the adjustment period. You know, there's an old thing. If you go 8-0 and then go 0-8, you're going to get fired. But if you go 0-8 and go 8-0, you're going to get kept. But in both cases, your team went 8-8.
Right. You
know? It's like, but it's the way it goes. Lynn, I thought Lynn would get fired basically because the team just seems so, unable to win a game, which the Chargers always have been a team that finds ways to lose, not just under Anthony Lynn. But they really seem to just play themselves out of games too often. And I know they had injuries in the offensive line, but you know, injuries is part of the game. And you can only use it as so much an excuse, but he'll have another chance. The Rivers situation will impact the team one way or another. I'm not sure that the coordinator Philip Rivers thing is an easy gap to solve. And I could be wrong here, but Norv Turner on the surface of it seemed like a perfect coordinator. Philip Rivers seemed like a perfect quarterback for a Norv Turner kind of offense. Just like Cousins had in Minnesota, but it doesn't seem to work out that way. And I think, you know, Norv may just be, the offense may just be a little too easy for defenses to cope with. But, you know, that I don't know. It wasn't Anthony Lynn who messed up the Melvin Gordon situation. I don't think they use Austin Eckler enough, which is strange because they use him a lot. But he's going to be a free agent and I don't know if they'll keep him. Because they might not be able to afford to keep both him and Gordon, so that's an interesting one to watch. But I want to know who the first mouth clown who got the nugget in before anyone else that Doug Marrone was fired.
Sure, so Marrone. I mean, God, talk about he's maybe along with Matt Patricia there. The biggest example of escapology.
The biggest being the operative word because those two are like in a race to see who can be the next Andy Reid. And Patricia's winning, I'll tell you. I'm not sure about why Patricia was kept. apart from maybe they thought it would be too embarrassing to fire him. And Quinn, the general manager.
He also has
the quarterback excuse.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you can use that one. Marone's case.
I guess they might be looking, Mike, at, you know, going right to the top of our show pretty much and saying, we don't want to be like the Browns. We don't want to be firing coaches after one season.
Yeah. I think you're right. And of course, you know, there was a lot of Jim Caldwell memeing going around, with a couple of weeks to go in the season, because Caldwell was fired after a winning season, which is an unusual thing in Detroit. Not the firing, the winning season. and if you go back, you know, they did the same thing a few years before that. You know, they missed the playoffs on a late touchdown and they fired the coach and the new coach came in and they missed the playoffs by the 12th week of the season. I don't know how Marone survived. What's weird there is that Caldwell and Marone are both there and Coughlin's out. Now, Coughlin's role in that organization never seemed to be very clearly defined. And, you know, I'm not sure Coughlin knew what it was, to be honest. But to get rid of him and keep the coach and general manager seems like the easy way out, put it that way. And I would expect that both of them are kind of walking the plank. This is like a do it this year or not kind of situation. But Jacksonville has certainly gone backwards since the year that they, you know, they were going to be the next great team in the NFL, and they beat the Patriots in week two or week three, whatever it was, of the following season, and then collapsed from that point on.
Maybe. I mean, you know, I wonder if it's the Gardner Minshew factor, if they're going to be.
That's a really good point, Nat, because Minshew reminds me of Fitz in a way. Mm. He's great. He was great when he came in and creates a change in the atmosphere and stuff. But if you have him as your 16-week quarterback, is he actually going to be good enough to get you all the way or a good portion of the way? Mm. And that's always been the situation with Fitz. You know, and in his best years, he's taken teams to the first round of the playoffs. You know, probably his best season with the Jets. And then he had one real Fitz game in the first round of the playoffs. And that's going to be, I mean, that Minshew could have a long and successful career like that, just the way that Fitzpatrick has, because it's better than what a lot of guys can give you. And certainly Fitz played a great game on Sunday against the Patriots. But I'm not sure that he's the guy who's going to carry you all season long, particularly if your offensive coordinator is not Minshew friendly, you know, and trying to make an offense that's going to work for him. And you can't really, you could conceivably get the same offense to work for Nick Foles and for Minshew. And I think that's what, DeFilippo tried to do at the start, but eventually teams caught up to Minshew's limitations, and then he doesn't play for a few weeks, and they surprise start him, and it took teams by surprise. Took me by surprise. I might have picked the Jags.
His evolution and certainly sophomore season is going to be interesting to watch. Same moving to the Giants now, who've made a change with Daniel Jones, who had an up and down, entirely predictable for a rookie quarterback season in the league, but it wasn't enough to save Pat Shurmur. We were talking on the pod about the final week of the season, Shurmur's body language and the way he was interacting with the players on the sidelines. He looked, there's a lot of speculation anyway, but he knew that the end was coming. This is the way that he was behaving, I think, in that game. And it was announced that by John Mara that he's gone, but Dave Gettleman, their GM, is coming back. So do you think they've got that the right way around?
A shock, but not a surprise. Yeah, Shurmur had to go. I mean, Pat Shurmur is what he is. You know, it's an odd coincidence that his Giants record is 9-23 and his overall record before he went to the Giants was 10-23 as a head coach. He's an okay offensive coordinator. I don't think he's just like I was saying, with Freddie Kitchens, I'm not sure he's got the kind of big picture skills that make a great head coach. The Giants are a team that, like the Steelers, favors continuity, calmness, tradition, whatever you want to call it. not as successfully as the Steelers in the past four decades or whatever. But I'm not sure what Gettleman has done to suggest that he should stay. Whether the personnel additions have been great. I've said when they drafted, Jones, that Jones was Eli Manning. That's what they were looking for, and that's how he played. A few more turnovers than Eli, but that presumably the fumbling that will slow down as he gets older. They built an offensive line. They spent a lot of money on Nate Solder, for example, with no great success. Gettleman's great at judging big beefs on the defensive line. That's what he did in Carolina. He comes from the Giants originally, so he's in that kind of, Bill Parcells, Tom Coughlin, George, even go back to George Young kind of mindset. But I just don't know. It'd be interesting to think of what if they had a stronger charactered head coach, not necessarily a better guy than Pat Shurmur, but a guy with, more in the Coughlin mode, what the Odell Beckham situation would have been. Would he be able to sort of keep that talent in line and focused on helping the team rather than, making one great catch a year, to be in the decade highlight films or whatever. I'm watching this one. This is going to be an interesting one to watch because I'm not sure how much influence Gettleman will have over who they hire as coach. They've asked, to talk to McDaniels. They've asked to talk to Matt Rhule. At Baylor, Rhule apparently, has said he's going to stay there, but college coaches say lots of things and very rarely in terms of jobs keep to what they say. And I'm wondering if there might be some other college coach, in the picture, like Urban Meyer, say, who, went to that Washington, New York game and everybody thought, Jerry Jones was going to be watching. And there's a lot of talk that Meyer might be going to Dallas if Jason Garrett does get fired.
Well, he's good. Let's end on the coaching chat.
Yeah, there's that big, in Dealey Plaza now, there's this huge screen with minutes to go till Jason Garrett is fired.
No, there's not.
Yeah, talk about the Zapruder film. There's various theories, right? There's the theory that Jerry Jones wants the Cowboys to be like the Giants and be a big family, the Mara, and he can be Wellington Mara because Wellington Mara was the closest thing that the NFL had to royalty, And that's purely because you've been around and, because Tim Mara, who bought the Giants, was a bookie. It's not like this guy's descended from actual nobility in Britain or Ireland or whatever. So anyway, Jerry Jones wants to be that. That's one theory. So Garrett's part of the family and he's having a hard time getting rid of him or figuring out if he can make him like vice president of stuff.
That'd be a great gig.
In the front office. Yeah, I'd take that.
Yeah, you'd be great.
And, the second theory is that Garrett's got the picks. Nobody knows who the picks are of or what they're of, but. If he gets fired, the picks go to
actual pictures. I thought you meant I was thinking draft picks.
Oh, not draft picks, no pictures. Okay. Yeah, he's photos. And they go to BuzzFeed if he gets fired.
Or
TMG or whatever. The other theory, which I think may be right, is that Jerry isn't going to let Garrett go until he's got Plan B in place.
In place.
And the latest rumor, of course, was Urban Meyer or Link. Lincoln Riley as Plan B. And I think that's a really interesting one. Because if you remember when Jerry hired his college teammate, Jimmy Johnson, as head coach of Dallas, he brought in a hugely successful college coach who'd been successful at two programs, Oklahoma State and Miami, and took control, which is, something that in the end wound up getting him fired because Jimmy Johnson was getting all the credit and Jerry, who was already the general manager there and working on the same page with Jimmy, didn't like that. So who did he go to when he fired Jimmy Johnson? Barry Switzer from Oklahoma, successful college coach in what was then the Big Eight, didn't rock the boat, didn't take the spotlight away from Jerry Jones. And when you look at Urban Meyer and Lincoln Riley, they fit those two profiles almost perfectly. Meyer's a guy who wants complete control, you know, builds himself up to heart attacks because he's such a, you know, micromanager and details kind of guy. And I think a very talented coach who probably could do well in the NFL. Riley's the kind of the opposite. Riley's had huge success at Oklahoma, but that's because he's Oklahoma and playing in the Big 12. Riley is Cliff Kingsbury.
As
a coach, he comes out of that, Texas Tech program. And I'm not convinced that Riley's got the big picture thing to be a great coach in the NFL.
But both of them, I mean, Riley's got a whole lot of buzz about him because of what's happened at Oklahoma in recent years in particular. And Meyer's got that, as you suggested. Wouldn't it be great to see him in a big team or at a big team in the NFL? So they're both going to come with a lot of attention, aren't they, and hype.
Yeah. I mean, there'll be a lot of attention, obviously. There'll be attention for anybody. But, you know, Meyer coached first at Bowling Green and then Utah, where he had great success, and then to Miami, Florida, sorry, and then at Ohio State. And he was successful. And in bowl games, he's been – I think Riley's lost every bowl game he's played in. Meyer was like – at Ohio State, he's only been 4-3, I think. But at Utah and Florida, he was like 7-1. Now, it's harder for Utah to get into a big bowl game. And in Florida, it was a bit hard. But that's an impressive record in bowl games when you're playing against the best other teams in the country.
Sure.
So as you can see, I'm much stronger on Urban Meyer as a potential NFL coach than I am on Lincoln Riley.
Right. Point, though, that Garrett and I take your point with Switzer. It was before I was covering the NFL, so I don't remember it as well as you do, but they were, they didn't take the attention away from Jerry Jones. The two names you're talking about are much higher profile characters, aren't they?
Yeah, but, Meyer will be a focus of attention, but Meyer, I would assume, would demand a certain amount of guaranteed autonomy. And I don't know how you do that with Jerry. He and his son basically run the personnel department and Jerry is the GM. Riley would have much less leverage in that kind of discussion. So, I think he would be content to come in and just be the coach. And in fairness, it's not a bad situation for a talented coach because there is a lot of talent on the team. Jerry's not a bad general manager. There've been certain holes in the Cowboys over the years, but he does recognize talent. He does listen a bit, at least to his son. He listened to the scouts when they went with Frederick as the first pick and he wanted to take a quarterback and they talked him out of that. And Dak's been pretty successful. And I think the big thing that either Meyer or Riley would bring to that team is the potential of unleashing Dak Prescott, in an offense that will be more Dak friendly, than it's been. And not that it's been bad for him, but Garrett's offenses have been, even with Kellen Moore at quarterback, who, had a pretty good start of the year and then teams caught up with what he was and wasn't doing,
Two more things on the Cowboys. I'm going to your top five, Mike.
Apparently one other thing, there is, Oklahoma's lost a recruit already, a high school quarterback who was being recruited, and people are looking at that as a sign that Lincoln Riley is going to the NFL. That doesn't necessarily mean he's going to Dallas, but Dallas would be the kind of like the front running obvious choice.
Because the quarterback had said that if he decommitted, as they call it, from the Sooners, because if Lincoln Riley wasn't going to be there, then he was going to look elsewhere. So people are joining the dots there.
Yeah, it's funny when a 17-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid is ahead of everybody else
on the page. Yeah, there you go. Maybe he could tip off whoever had the Doug Marone story as well and see if
I wish I could remember who the first guy was who said Marone's definitely out. This rush to be the first tweet is ridiculous.
It's life in the fast lane. The other key thing about the Cowboys, and getting to your top five, is it's a technicality, but I think one that is maybe being a little bit overlooked, that Jerry Jones doesn't need to fire Jason Garrett. His contract runs down.
Right, right.
Re-up it. So
yeah, he's got till the 14th, I think, is when the contract expires.
Yeah. So that might explain quite a lot as well. All right, let's get in. We'll do mailbag at the end.
He could be punishing Garrett.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. Let's get into your top five. And as we said at the top of the show, it's a fun packed top five this week. It's the top five most disappointing players of the season, I'm presuming, as opposed
of the season.
Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And right. Okay. The honorable mentions.
Of course. Let's start with that. 7, 8, 9.
Joe Flacco, who you can't say was disappointing because anybody with half a brain knew what was going to happen when he went to Denver. So I can't, the only person who's disappointed is John Elway, who thought that that was going to be the thing that worked. And I put Kirk Cousins in the same situation. Because Cousins perpetually is a disappointment, but people overestimate how good he is. And, you know, a lot of people, I won't mention any names, but when we were doing the games at Wembley, a lot of people were saying Cousins ought to be MVP and Matt Stafford ought to be MVP and that kind of thing early in the season. But Cousins.
I did throw Matt Stafford as an MVP candidate.
Yeah, Cousins almost inevitably is a disappointment because I think, you know, he is what he is and he can make you some plays and he won't make you some plays, but he doesn't consistently do it.
So it's a bit too soon to write Cousins off, but anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a good quarterback. He's just not a great quarterback. Yeah. So going down the list now, at five, it's a dual package of Trey Flowers and Trent Brown, the two guys who the Patriots really miss and who got huge money to go to other teams and were not disappointments on the field, but they were what they were. And for that kind of money, you really need them to be that and something else. It's like Trent Brown went back to right tackle for the Raiders. Do you really want to spend that much money on a right tackle?
Right.
Even if you are a run first team. And Trey Flowers went to Matt Patricia. We said, you know, great fit, all that kind of stuff. But the impact that Trey Flowers makes is not the impact of a guy who registers to 15 sacks. He played really well. He had a good season, but they still needed another ingredient to make that defense work better. And they spent a lot of money on that defense, and it really, I think, underperformed. At number four, I've got Phillip Rivers, which the Chargers as a whole disappointed, and the offensive line made Rivers season a lot worse than it needed to be, but Rivers has become a kind of Brett Favre light where everything revolves around him getting the ball into places where he doesn't always get it. And he's had some really bad games. You know, and it's not for want of talent. It's not for want of effort, or toughness or anything like that. It's just that I don't think he's in the position where he can carry that team the way he thinks he can. Not even that the coaches think he can. So I think he's kind of a what would you call it? A millstone on that. Josh Rosen. Not a huge disappointment, but the story was it was a good pickup for the Dolphins for a second round pick. He was on a terrible team in Arizona, so give him a chance with a good team. Well, you know how that worked out because the Dolphins were a terrible team. The next thing they do is they get rid of their left tackle. They get rid of their running back. They get rid of, you know, I think that Rosen's ceiling is Jared Goff. And his floor is probably below Kyle Bowler's.
What we've seen
is floor for 2 years. So, you know, there's a floor in his game, you might say.
Nice.
I suspect Fitz will be the starter there next year.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, they may even draft another quarterback because they've got three first round picks. I don't think they'll go crazy trying to get Joe Burrow. But they could pick up a quarterback, you know, to bring along and compete with Rosen for that second job. And, you know, maybe Rosen will come through with some team in the end. I don't know. I've got two parlays tied at second.
Of course you have.
Nick Foles and Leonard Fournette.
Okay. I like it.
you know, Foles has the excuse of being hurt, obviously, but when he came back, he was, you know, by that point, the Jags had given up, I think. So it was an unfair kind of judgment, but he couldn't really do much. And Fournette is Fournette. You know, it's like you keep waiting for him to, you know, people, there are a lot of people who would say that Saquon Barkley or even Zeke Elliott were disappointments this year.
Sure.
Because they didn't carry the
Saquon,
team
I think so. Yeah.
The way that the team is designed to be built. Now, in Barkley's, you know, for Barkley, you could say, well, the Giants had no receivers for most of the season, so it was easy for teams to key up on him.
Yeah.
For Elliott, it's, you know, I don't know how you work that one. He seems to be up and down. But Fournette really has not been at the top. He hasn't delivered at the top level since maybe his rookie season, and yeah, then got hurt. And I don't know, you know, if injuries are part of that, like they are. You know, we give Todd Gurley a break because we assume that he's injured and playing through it. You know, Fournette could be kind of the same way. And the second part of the parlay is another dual entry. And this one probably with a lot more justification, Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham Jr. you know, Mayfield's another guy who I say he is what he is, and you really need to adjust to that. And Freddie Kitchens did last year, but I think he couldn't adjust further this year. So teams tried to keep him in the pocket, make him see over the linemen, make him make his choices that way. And you thought that with Landry and Odell Beckham and Njoku, that would be relatively easy for him to do. But Beckham was Beckham. He just wasn't showing up for much of the season. He wasn't making the everyday catches you need to make, which is what Landry is so good at. You know, it's why they should be such a good pair, because you know, if you account for Beckham over the top, then you can't necessarily double Landry on the shorter routes. And Landry's kind of like an Anquan Boldin type, you know, who will run the tough routes and make the tough catches. So you have to think that parlay is a huge disappointment. And when you consider, you know, Mayfield's history with the team, and you consider Odell Beckham's history with the Giants, you ought to have seen it coming. You know, it was like guys tend to be what they are unless someone makes them be something else. And Freddie Kitchens wasn't the guy to make them be something else. But the winner and the absolute kind of letdown of the season, strategy gone wrong, personal strategy gone wrong, money gone wrong from the team. Le'Veon Bell living Le'Veon Rose in New Jersey with the Jets. Like, I mean, what were they thinking of? Le'Veon Bell was supposed to turn this team into a contender, you know, by running, and he just wasn't dominant, and you have to be dominant. Why wasn't he dominant? Well, maybe because they didn't have a Ben Roethlisberger taking some of the pressure off him, or an Antonio Brown downfield, or a Juju Smith-Schuster downfield. You know, maybe Adam Gase wasn't able to do with him what you need to do with him. But when they gave him the ball, he did not deliver. I, you know, game after game after game, 8 catches, 35 yards, you know, 12 carries, 50 yards. That's not what you're paying the Le'Veon Bell money for. And just
where
to
does
end
he play
it,
next season, Mike?
Let me remind you that he could have had more money if he stayed in Pittsburgh.
Stayed in Pittsburgh, of course. Of course. So it's lose for everyone. Where does he play next season, Le'Veon Bell?
I assume with the Jets, you know, and I assume that Gase will go back and, you know, and think about what they did and try to use him in, you know, in a better way. But you know, Le'Veon Bell has the talent if you put a line in front of him and you know, that to be a dual threat operator the same way a Kamara or a Hunt is, you know, and that's kind of the offense that they need to be running, and take some of the pressure off him with Robbie Anderson downfield or somebody downfield, you know, that just didn't seem to work for them.
Right, couple from the mailbag, and we're going to get out of Dodge. So we'll go first to Reese. I like this one, and I think you might as well, Mike. Reese asks, was 2019 Belichick's worst draft class? N'Keal Harry in the first round looks like a huge stretch, he says. And as good as Isaiah Wynn has been, he missed 9 games.
Well, Isaiah Wynn was 2018. But he missed his whole rookie season.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, so the question is, you know, what Harry's a disappointment in a sense, but I'm not sure it's his worst draft class because their drafts tend to be, you know, one or two successes. And they do a lot of throwing things at the wall. Wait till next year. They traded away a lot of draft picks for very little return this year, trying to fill those gaps. Part of the problem is that they don't often, they sometimes don't trust young players enough. And you see this most this year with Tom Brady and the young receivers. Now, you know, Jacoby Myers, undrafted guy. Harry, the first draft pick, and started the year hurt, so he didn't join the team till halfway through the season. But you make a mistake, and Brady tends to wipe you out and you know, and hesitate to throw to you. And that's been their problem this year, is that, you know, he doesn't have a guy who he can throw to apart from Edelman. And, you know, you saw what Buffalo did. They doubled Edelman. And the other guys couldn't step up, you know, Philip Dorsett.
Why is Sanu being so disappointing? Because he was a pretty dependable.
Yeah, and they gave a second round pickup for him, which I thought was crazy at the time. He's been a dependable guy. He just doesn't seem to have that much left in the tank right now.
Right.
And you kept waiting for him to sort of, okay, he's a smart receiver. He's going to get the system quickly. He'll be where Brady needs to be, but then he didn't make the catches all the time. Yeah. And he wasn't, you know, he wasn't able to get open is basically the problem. To get those plays. So yeah, I don't know if this is a particularly bad draft for Bill. You have to wait to judge them, but in terms of what they needed for this season, it didn't deliver. You know, we thought Harry would be someone who could step up and create mismatches the way, you know, take part of the slack of losing Gronk away. And then you have to ask yourself why they didn't pick up a tight end, you know, this year or the year before, you know, when they could have had Dallas Goedert 1 year was available at the point where they were picking. They wound up getting Duke Dawson, who's now with the Broncos and not playing.
One more for you, Mike. Are the 49ers, asked Keith, good this season because of or despite Jimmy Garoppolo?
Neither, I don't think. I don't think Garoppolo holds them back. I don't think he's the reason they're there. The reason they're there is their defense primarily. Yeah. The secondary thing is the offense, and which is Shanahan scheming. And you know, they had a good draft pick, in Debo, and, a good trade for Emmanuel Sanders, which gives him the threats on all levels. So Garoppolo's delivering what the offense needs. There might be some quarterbacks who could do it a bit better, more accurately. He hasn't been throwing downfield at all. Or been accurate when he does. So that's, you know, I don't think with, say, Matt Ryan at quarterback, they would be that much better, especially given the problems they had in the offensive line this season. And Garoppolo was able to cope with that pretty well. I think they are pretty much as they are, with or without Jimmy G.
One more. I lied. I said one more for the road, two more for the road. From the Full 10 Yards crew, shout out to them, of course. Fantastic pod. Go check them out. Are the Packers, asked the Full 10 Yards crew, the most flattered number two seed ever?
I don't think so. I actually, you know, if you look at some teams going back, you look at a quarterback carrying a team, which is kind of what Aaron Rodgers has done. But I mean, remember the Bears? They were a second seed with Kyle Orton at quarterback as a rookie. And then Rex Grossman came back when they made it, you know, to the Super Bowl. The Dolphins in 92, who lost to the Bills, who were the better team, I think, but Marino had carried them kind of, to the playoff situation. The Steelers with Neil O'Donnell. Went all the way to the Super Bowl. Yeah. You know, they're not, when you're in that second seed, it's not, you know, it gives you a bit of an advantage, obviously. What I'm just trying to think, the Stan Humphries Chargers, the Falcons with, Chandler at quarterback, when the Vikings should have beat them, but Anderson missed the field goal, Gary Anderson, and then Morton Anderson made it. I think most of the time what you see are teams without great quarterbacks getting those second seeds, and without, you know, sometimes with very good defenses, but not necessarily Tampa Bay, Ravens turn of the century defenses. And then you get occasionally the team that the quarterback's carrying, which was sort of the Marino Dolphins. Their defense is good, but not great coming along. and Rodgers, you know, I think every game I've picked in the last 3 years, 5 years, when you look at Green Bay, you just think, okay, can Aaron Rodgers throw 3 touchdown passes against this team or throw enough touchdown passes to beat, you know, and this year, I mean, look at the game on Sunday. The big play of that game was Rodgers somehow getting rid of a ball to Aaron Jones, you know, when he's like in the grasp and turned around and he gets the ball to Aaron Jones, and then Aaron Jones, you know, makes a tremendous individual run into field goal range, and they win the game.
And they win it, yeah, and they nick it when they were up against it. Yeah, really, they are an odd team, the Packers, but as you suggested, maybe there isn't that much different about this incarnation to what we've seen in the past. Lovely stuff, Mike. FMTE/FNT. Mike Carlson is the Patreon site to read Mike's stylings. We'll be picking the playoff games, I'm guessing. Mike, you'll be picking the playoff games, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. On Friday, the playoff games. I thought you were on a roll, Nat. playoff games on Friday. I'll be up a little bit of recap. And then, you know, through the rest of the month, we'll fill out the column with picking the all-rookie team, the all-league team, that kind of stuff.
Lovely stuff. Get involved with that. And Mike, we're back next week to pick over the bones of the wild card.
Yeah, one thing I will not do is pick the Pro Bowl.
No, I think we should do an hour-long special on the Pro Bowl. That will unstick you against the computer. That'll be his last love. AccuScore. We'll nail the Pro Bowl. Cracking stuff, Mike. We'll see you next week.
Okay, have a good one.
Lovely stuff from Mike. He's back next Wednesday, each and every Wednesday, of course. We're back Friday. Marek Larwood in the house for our wild card special. We're rolling all the way through the playoffs up to and including the Super Bowl. We're going to be out in Miami dropping episodes every day. We're going to have some live shows as well from Miami. All kinds of good stuff as we gear up to the big shows. Stay with us through January, the business end of the season, as they say, for all your NFL news and views. We'll see you Friday. Bye for now.